stepped on and wrote a little letter. I found it in the address I found in New York Times. They were posting it every week, you know, relatives that looking for somebody. So I found the address where to write, the United Service for New Americans. I sat down, wrote there. I knew from my uncle that Americans don't like to read long letters, don't make long amices, you know, don't tell too long stories. So I sat down and a small little letter, told him the whole story condensed, where I have been, where I am. Besides all these atrocities and agonies I went through, I'm physically able to work. I mean, I would appreciate if they would help any way they can to build a future for me. Didn't take long, I got an answer. Not just an answer. I got called to the office in Stuttgart before even I got the letter. Did you write so-and-so, so-and-so? I said, I did. Don't you know we have an office here, you should come in? I said, yes, I was here, but you can't get in. I can't get in. I couldn't. Nobody let you in.
And what office was this?
That was the UNRWA, United Refugee Organization of America, or something like that. Okay, so she tells me what happens, and we'll be in touch with you. That was in 1948. It didn't take long. I was accepted. I went through the whole damn shebang. I was already packed to leave. I was just waiting for the date, ready to leave. I get a letter, or get called down there, I believe I was called in person, that all that, what was previously accepted, has been canceled. A new law is now in effect in the United States, that you have to go by number now. Well, lucky me, the President Truman, issued, I believe, 110,000 new immigrants from the displaced persons camp, and I got a number from it. Took a whole year. Finally made it in 1949. So April 5th, 1949, I arrived at the shores of New Orleans. Destination Nashville, Tennessee.
Why Nashville?
The Jewish Community Center was sponsoring X number of refugees. I was the first one there. I had a good reception. I had a good reception there from the Jewish community. Very fine people. Terrific people. Very friendly. very hospitable. If they could help in any way, they did. But I had to leave Nashville. I just couldn't stand the signs that says for colored, or colored on the buses, for colored to the rear, or the water fountain said for white and for colored. I said, damn it, I just got out of that shit in Europe. For you, the night's with for Borton. Here I came into the same shit house. I got in a fight on the streetcar there. Because I'm not supposed to sit in the rear. I'm supposed to sit in the front. The rear is for the blacks. Truck driver, the bus driver stopped the bus and he ordered me to go up in front. I said, why? He said, because you are white and these are black. I said, they don't make a difference to me. They're human, just like I am. Well, we got in a little fight. I came back and back home to the lady that I lived there, a Romanian from Romania. She says to me, Mr. Simon, you move up north because there's no place for you in the south because you're going to get killed. That's how I came to Detroit.
Did you know anybody in Detroit?
I had a couple friends that we were in camp together. We were in camp together and in this place, person camp together, not in the other camps. We were in the same camps, but not together. So, and I wrote him about it. So they told me, come down here. The year is entirely different. So I said, I just cannot drop and go. First of all, I don't have any money. Where will I go without money? So I said, I'll tell you what, I'll take a vacation between Christmas and New Year's under this disguise. You know, I'm not gonna spill, you know, before I got something else. So I took vacation between Christmas and New Year, came down here, and never went back. I came back for myself, and my old lady said, I bet you got a job there. You'll never come back, sure enough. Now I'm here.
What was your feelings, your first initial feelings towards the United States?
Not good. Not good. Like I said, I got slapped in the face by coming into Nashville. If I would have come into New York, Detroit, Cleveland, you know, Chicago, there would be a different story. But if you come into New Orleans, and you see what's going on there, that this is for blacks, the segregation, okay? The same thing that ghetto. I probably coined the word ghetto here.
Well, how is it you came to New Orleans? Everybody else came to New York.
Because there was no, we came with the military transport ships. And there was a ship going to this port or whatever it is there. So I was on it. It was 14 days on the ocean. And it's no fun in a transport ship, let me tell you something. No fun. It's a chapter by itself. a chapter by itself.
Do you talk about your experiences like you did tonight? Do you talk about these very often?
Once in a while, my son is asking me questions. And the same thing, he said, Dad, why don't you write it down? Why don't you write it down? You could have a book, you know, thousands and thousands of pages. I don't have the skill. It's not just you write, or you have to have a skill of putting down an essay. How to bring things together. I was telling the story here. It's jumped from one place to the other, one place to the other. There's a billion items in between, from 1939 to 1940, from 1940 to 1941, 41 to 42, and every day has a story by itself. Every day is a story by itself. How can you write it when we talk about it? You know, we have on the lighter side, you know, a Jew always have, Sholem Aleichem used to say, a gelechte bit yashurkes. There's no translation for it. I don't know how to explain to you what it means. But you laugh and you cry. Okay, you laugh on the outside, you cry on the inside. So we had, let's see, you left, you know, I was working in Buna at the IG farm industry. And as a roofer, after the bombardment, they bombarded the kitchen that supplied, you know, lunches for the entire plant. So we had to go repair the roof. So we left a hole in that roof. And we took our time to fix it. We got potatoes and salami and meat out of that roof, out of the warehouse there. So there's a lighter side to the story, right? So one night, we have to go back. Like I said, it's on the lighter side of the story. So I had a pail filled up with potatoes. You cannot take it to the camp. So we left it on the roof, you know, hidden, and covered up with something. The next building, which was two or three stories higher, another refugee or prisoner, you know, saw what I'm doing or what we are doing, and we took off, we went away. They came down and took the pail. I found out later, afterwards, that the same guy, we were good friends in this place person kept in Stuttgart. He said, yeah, I did it, he said. I did it. See, we had the opportunity when we had potatoes, for example. As a roofer, we made fire to warm up the tar in big drums. Tar, heated it up, you know, in order to be able to spread it on the roof. So we had another drum with water in it. Made another fire and boiled the potatoes. Trick of survival. Don't have to be a genius, but it is good. It's a good experience. If you should ever get lost in an aisle, an island somewhere, how to survive, how to heal yourself when you get cut, you have no bandage, or things that you wouldn't think of. You would think that you went to medical school in order to take care of it, but you did.
Do you suffer from any physical illness as a result of your experiences?
No. Not until last few months. They were telling me I had a cardiac arrest. It's a good thing I got the cardiac arrest after I retired. Didn't happen to me before I retired. But I didn't. Took a test and it wasn't a cardiac arrest. It just had hardening of the arteries, and you have to be careful. I don't get any pension from the Germans because they didn't want to prove anything for me. I have no reason to claim anything. And I didn't want to press on it too much either.
Because
my pride is more that their pension, whatever the amount is. You don't want anything.
Any psychological disabilities?
If I would have that, I would have gotten a pension.
Do you think about it a lot?
No.
Do you ever think of going back to Poland, to your home? Even after you were liberated, you never wanted to go back?
After I got out of Buchenwald, went to the West, because Buchenwald was taking over. Roosevelt died a week later, I believe. So then the Russians came in, they started straightening out the line. You know, so Russia took East Europe, East Germany, and so we hopped on a train that was delivering coal, you know, from east to the west. I hopped on the train and went west, went to Frankfurt. I went away from the Russians. And as soon as I got out of there, I said, my foot will never step into the on Polish soil. I might go back to Germany, to Stuttgart, to Frankfurt, you know, to the other places, but I'll never go back to Poland.
And see your home or anybody who's there?
Not my home, not my nothing. I have nothing to see there except heartache. I was in Israel and have a friend of mine that she left for Israel, her family left for Israel in 1934. And when we got together for Pacer, she was telling me that she, they took a trip, you know, to Europe. So while they were in Germany, so they flew over to Poland. So they went into the shtetl. She said, you're better off not to go. And she left before the war, 2 years before. I should go back to see what happened after the war.
What was she talking about specifically?
The entire... Well, that was even when we were there. Everything was, whatever it was Jewish, was torn apart. The shul, the Beis Medrash, all the Jewish institutions that used to be were just torn when we were there. They couldn't burn it because it was too condensed. you know, would create a fire of the entire city. So what they decided to do was tear it apart. And they tore it apart. Even that old cemetery that wasn't in use, I believe, for the last 100 or 200 years, but it was there because it was there with monuments with that you could still read, you know, the people, the Tzadik so-and-so, Tzadik so-and-so, you know, Chosid so-and-so, that were just leveled off. So what was there to go to see? I would go and see the place that I went to Cheder, or go to see where the place I went to Shul, or to the Yeshiva, or the other places where you used to go dancing, or you used to go, you know, either just playing baseball, or soccer, or something. It's not there. What are you going to go see? You're better off, in my opinion. I'm better off if I think back to live with the memory, than see what became of it. This is my opinion.
Do you have nightmares? Do you have nightmares?
I wouldn't say no. I cope with it.
Does the past interfere at all with your life today?
No. I don't let it. I, from way back, I'm a strong-minded man. From way, way back when I was a youngster. They call it stubborn, okay? I'm a stubborn man. I have a different word for it. Determined. I'm determined. I was determined to come to the United States because when the war ended, I was 30 years old. Well, where will I start anything if not in the United States? At least I, with my skill, I'm secured of a job. I wouldn't have to stand in line in the soup kitchen. That was true, thank God. From the day I came to last year, I've never been out of work. I built up a life for myself.
What kind of work do you do here?
I'm the same in the sheet metal. I was doing heating and air conditioning. Where else in the world can a man, now I know it, because I've been these places, can a man come in with not a penny in his pocket, and to be frank and honest about it, not even a decent pair of pants on his toes, to come to that and be able to retire after 31 years being in the country? Where else? Can anybody do it in Germany? Can I do it in England? Even so, England's supposed to be a democracy. Can I do it in France?
Have you become a citizen?
Oh yeah, a long time ago. Long time ago. I was in the country, I believe, 4 years. That's what the requirements was. 4 years and I got my citizenship there. Even so, I don't care to go to elect a president, because I was very much disappointed in 1956 Madame Eisenhower ordered the Israelis, the British, and the French out of the Suez area. I don't know if you remember that. That he ordered them out of there. We wouldn't have that mess that we in the Middle East that we have now if their presence would have been there. He ordered them. I said, go back with it. They'll go, all go for their own glory, not for the people. Except Roosevelt, maybe. I didn't know him, but as much as I read about him or hear about him, that he was for the people, for the American people. Maybe not 100%, because he shouldn't have let the ship go back to Germany. Not 100%. Okay, he got his lesson. However, he provided a decent life. He cared about the poor. He cared about the unemployed. He cared about the... He ever got a president that cares about prayer in school, but it doesn't care about 9 million unemployed. What to do about it? The same thing with Milliken. He doesn't care how, from years back, that Michigan is going down and down and down and down and down. Didn't care about it, didn't even look into how to get industry into the state or make the industry that's in here to stay, not to leave. But Texas, he has to keep up a government, so give me Texas, give me Texas. Where from? This kind of people am I gonna elect?
Mr. Columbus, thank you. It was an excellent interview.
I enjoyed it.
When I called you, you said that you're not experienced, you're not a celebrity. I think you did very well, and I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Compliment. I'm a self-made man, and I'm proud of it.
I can understand why.
I haven't seen an illiterate Jew. I've been around. And I met people under all kinds of circumstances. And I know their lives, but they're not illiterate. He might not be as good in English as somebody else, but he is good. I ran into a lunchman in Philadelphia. Poor, poor, what we would call here below poverty level. Okay. Here in the United States, he's an automobile dealer. And I thought to myself, where else in the United States? They're also self-made men. Also self-made men. Because people from our age didn't have the opportunity or the chance or the place or the country or the people to turn out what they can give from themselves, not to others. You come to the United States, say a blecher like me, you know, at home we call it a blecher, a tinsmith. A blecher like me, who there was the kitchen, there was the shop. There was the kitchen, there was the shop. Could come to the United States and have a little factory, making ductwork and machinery, anywhere else, United States. At one point I made the right decision.
By the way, I wanted to ask you, how you met your wife.
My wife?
Yes.
Oh, I met her here in Detroit. She's American born. She was born in Mount Clemens.
And you have one son that's a doctor?
And then my daughter is in college. She is graduating next June. So my son is in residency now in Topeka, Kansas. I'm proud of both of them. And I'm proud of myself. I accomplished a lot. I suffered a lot. It was worth it.